The latest victim would be Susan Lamb, the Queensland ALP lower house member. She gave a very emotional speech in the parliament yesterday where she explained that she couldn't get the documents that she needed in order to prove that she wasn't a dual citizen because she's estranged from her mother, and she's not legally able to get the forms without her mother's permission. Quite a sad and emotional speech as she delved into her family history. Her mother dropped her off at school as a six-year-old one time and never came back. So a personal tragedy, and I suppose it underlines just how difficult the citizenship issue has become for some MPs.
And even after giving that speech, though, the government is still sort of calling on her to stand down, I believe.
That's right. The government has decided that it will play hardball with this issue. Obviously, it's already had to call a number of by-elections itself for some of its sitting members, and it's not in a mood, I think, to extend any sympathy to the Labor Party.
With the latest citizenship exits and those, as you mentioned, by-elections, what parties have sort of started to gain prominence on the floor or have regained some semblance of power in all of this?
Well, I mean, I think it hasn't really changed the power dynamics in terms of the numbers. They're essentially the same as what they were after the 2016 election. But it's certainly caused a very interesting by-election in Melbourne, in the seat of Batman, which is in the inner north of Melbourne. That's seen the resignation of the Labor MP David Feeney, and a by-election there, which is going to be a ding-dong battle between the Greens and Labor.
The Greens already control a major seat in Melbourne. Would they gain a bit more power by getting someone in the seat of Batman?
Yes, this would be a big win for the Greens if they could get it, for the reason that it would establish their power base in the inner city of Melbourne. If you look at the state electorate, they've actually won that state electorate of Northcote already in a recent by-election. And so it seems to sort of consolidate a green power base in inner Melbourne, if they win.
I'm speaking with Ben Eltham from New Matilda about the big issues in federal politics. Jim Molan was recently elected off the back of a by-election which resulted from dual citizen Fiona Nash's exit. And how is he doing at the moment?
Well, Jim Molan, of course, was well down the Liberal Party Senate list, and he sort of ended up in the Senate after the resignation of Nash. He's a hardline liberal from the right wing of the Liberal Party, a former major general, actually, who's been a prominent activist in liberal ideological politics. And people have started delving into his background, as often happens when you have new politicians enter the chamber. And some of the media outlets have found that Jim Molan has posted some very inflammatory material on social media over the years. Most notably, he retweeted two videos from Britain First, a very right-wing British pressure group.
Sorry to interrupt. Is that the same one that Trump retweeted before there were protests in the UK calling for his exit, him to not be allowed to enter the country?
That's right, yep, the very same group. They've got a very checkered history over there in Britain. They've also been responsible for inciting violence. Several of the terrorists, the right-wing terrorists in Britain, have used Britain First material. And, of course, the man who murdered Joe Cox, the British Labour MP, actually shouted a Britain First slogan while he was carrying out that assassination. So a very pointed political gesture to make. And Molan's actually got a past. He's got a very right-wing position on a lot of issues. He was involved in the first Iraq war, and he played a very important role in the assault on Fallujah by US and coalition forces. That resulted in the deaths of a lot of civilians. So Labor and the Greens have started to look into Molan's history, and of course that's put him under pressure.
He's started a lot of fires with those actions and a bit about his past, and the coalition, though, doesn't seem to be sort of pressuring him for an apology or anything or some way of putting out these fires. Why do you think that might be?
Well, I think that it plays into the Liberal Party internal politics. Molan is a prominent member of the Liberal right. He's a prominent conservative. He's friends of Andrew Bolt. He's got deep connections with the national security apparatus, obviously being a former general. And so for all of those reasons, I don't think Malcolm Turnbull's inclined to take him on. He's going to sort of make a few concessions here or there. I believe he's deleted the offending material, made a sort of grudging apology. But I don't expect him to back down on a lot of these issues. He's going to be a strident supporter of Liberal hardline conservative positions in the Senate.
With those connections, is it possible he might rise to a certain ministerial level, like to a higher position in the cabinet?
I think there's a lot of people in front of him before we start talking about cabinet positions, but it's certainly the case that he's got a lot of experience in national security issues. One of the things that he did, for example, was help design Operation Sovereign Borders for Tony Abbott and Scott Morrison. So he's someone who's had a lot of influence behind the scenes, and I think that if he stays in the Senate, he's got a good chance of climbing the ranks.
Now, speaking of fires in the coalition ranks, the Barnaby Joyce love child situation has been sort of rocking the news. It seems a bit tabloid and gossipy, but it's interesting that the coalition haven't sort of given some sort of hardline stance, considering how conservative and right-wing their views should be. Why do you think there hasn't been any kind of official response in this situation?
Well, I think this is the age-old double standard that often applies to men, which is that they're quite happy to talk about the sanctity of marriage and traditional family values, but when they do something naughty, then their colleagues are all too willing to forgive them. I think the main issue of the Barnaby Joyce situation has really been one of media ethics. There's been a lot of hand-wringing in the media over the last 24 hours about people asking if the media knew about this situation, which it did for months. Why didn't it report it until now? Some of the media have said, look, we weren't interested, we don't think it's important, it's not policy, it's just the private life of a politician. Whereas others have mounted feminist and gender analyses and pointed out that a woman in this situation, a female politician, would almost certainly have been treated very differently by the media.